Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanacha. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, Text 25. Nityam nirakshamananam yat api dvaka kokasam na vrityanti hi drisha shriyo damangamachutam. Nityam nirakshamananam yad api dvaka kokasam na vipranti hidrisha shriyodamangamachutam. Nityam nirakshamananam yad api dvaka kokasam na vipranti hidrisha Shriya Dhammangamachyutam. Nityam, regularly, always. Nirakshamananam, of those who look at him. Yet, although, api, in spite of, dvarka avakasham, the inhabitants of Dvarka. Na, never. Vitripyanti, satisfied. He, exactly. Drisha, sight. Shriyaha, beauties. Dhamma Angam, the bodily reservoir. Achutam, the infallible. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yeah. The inhabitants of Dvarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. Purport. When the ladies of the city of Dvarka got up on the roofs of their palaces, they never thought that they had previously many times seen the beautiful body of the infallible Lord. This indicates that they had no satiation in desiring to see the Lord. Anything material seen for a number of times ultimately becomes unattractive by the law of satiation. The law of satiation acts materially, but there is no scope for it in the spiritual realm. The word infallible is significant here because although the Lord has mercifully descended on earth, he is still infallible. The living entities are fallible because when they come in contact with the material world, they lack their spiritual identity, and thus the body materially obtained becomes subjected to birth, growth, transformation, situation, deterioration, and annihilation under the laws of nature. The Lord's body is not like that. He descends as he is and is never under the laws of the material modes. His body is the source of everything that be, the reservoir of all beauties beyond our experience. No one, therefore, is satiated by seeing the transcendental body of the Lord, because there are always manifestations of newer and newer beauties. The transcendental name, form, qualities, entourage, etc., are all spiritual manifestations, and there is no satiation in chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no satiation in discussing the qualities of the Lord, and there is no limitation of the entourage of the Lord. He is the source of all and is limitless. Om Agyanta Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Spa Vipantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees that we can say something for the benefit of the devotees, for the pleasure of Shishi Radhe Shyam, and may it be in line with Guru Parampara. Hare Krishna. Nice to be with all of you again for the morning program. So we're reading from Canto 1, Chapter 11, entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, Text 25. I'll read this translation again. The inhabitants of Dwarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. So this chapter is a beautiful meditation on how to welcome Krishna, how to receive Krishna. But how is that practical for us? How do we do that? Well, one purport, Prabhupada mentions that this chapter is very significant for the purpose of deity worship or festivals. If you think about it, the whole chapter, we learn how to perform a festival, how to worship the deities, how to receive and welcome Krishna. At the first verse of this chapter, Krishna blows the conch shell. Right? This is how it begins every morning, right? The blowing of the conch shell, the soon-to-be darshan of the Lord. And then the residents, how do they respond when they hear the conch shell? They become very alert and eager, and they spontaneously go running. I don't think I've ever ran when I heard the conch shell, but, you know, we get eager. We're happy to... Sometimes if you're further away and you want to come in time, especially for a festival, right? If you hear the conch shell, it's time to see Krishna, so you prepare yourself and you come before the Lord. And so the whole chapter, we can see it in that light to see what should a festival look like in the temple. Deity worship, right? Krishna, the conch shell blows, Krishna's arrival, the residents come running, and they bring so many things. They bring so many gifts, and they bring their hearts full of devotion to the Lord. And everything for the residents of Dwarka, of course, is spontaneous. And for us, For myself, it's more of a practice. You know, we get our method because when a devotee is completely pure and surrendered, they do certain things. And what they do becomes our method. We practice the same things that they do out of spontaneous love. We try to practice that. It's like in the seventh canto, Prahlad Maharaj. There's a famous verse where he tells, when his father asks him, what did you learn at school? What is the best thing you learned in school? And then he speaks this famous verse, Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam. He mentions the 9 items of devotional service. At the very next verse, he explains in that verse that when one is completely surrendered to the Lord, these 9 things happen. They flow spontaneously. So our method becomes, okay, a pure devotee, when they're in that state of love of God, what do? They do these things. They like to hear. They like to chant. They like to serve the deity. So our method as practitioners, we do that. And we do that maybe not spontaneously. We do it out of duty, but we're connected to the Guru Parampara. There's a link there. There's an instruction to do it. And in this way, we're purified by doing it. We should also be careful that it's not just mechanical, but we also bring some heart to it. We bring some prayer to it. Krishna, please allow the natural attraction in my heart to awaken so that I can serve you with no impediments. So even if we practice, we can bring some prayer into it. We can bring some heart into it. So here, this description of Dwarka, and Bhagavatam's Rasalaya, just like we have the Himalaya mountain, means full of ice. So Bhagavatam is called Rasalaya, means full of rasa. So even just hearing this description of the landscape of Dwarka and the residents and their gifts and the beautiful arrangements, this helps to make us Krishna conscious. Because an environment always corresponds to the consciousness of the residents. You know, so when you hear about the environment of Dwarka, you're also getting a glimpse into it's in harmony with the consciousness of the residents. Just like when we hear descriptions in the Bhagavatam of Svargaloka, they're very, you know, sometimes we wonder, why does the Bhagavatam go into such description of the places and the landscapes and what you see? There's a relationship to the people, to the consciousness, the collective consciousness. So the description of Svargaloka, you know, it's very beautiful and gorgeous and palatial buildings, very opulent also, very beautiful, everything is so nice and heavenly. So that's also the consciousness of the residents there. Like that, they have that opulence also, that there's a strong, there's still a desire for power and for opulence. Even though they're servants of Krishna and they're very pure. When we hear about the hellish planets, right? The hellish mentality. So what do you think hell looks like? You think it's a gorgeous, beautiful place with lakes and... No, it reflects. It's also very dark. It's also a very dark place, right? When we hear about... So the different environments, you know, so that makes us think this earth that we live on. If we observe nature, how does that reflect our consciousness, being earthlings, being from the earth? That's an interesting thought, right? Because some people say, well, you know, this world is so beautiful. And it is, right? Some parts are not beautiful. Some parts of nature are very bleak and cold and harsh. And then there are certain areas that are also very, very beautiful and gorgeous and makes us think of Krishna and his beauty. But not all of it. And that's because, you know, I mentioned Svargaloka, hellish planets, so we're right in the middle. So the Earth, the middle planetary systems have kind of a mix of the pleasure, of the joy, of the beauty, but also of the pain. And there's also a darkness, there's also a coldness. So this is considered, so we might think, well, that's sad, we're kind of like in this mixed place, and there's a higher place, the heavenly realm sounds very attractive. But the acharyas explain that being in the middle like that is actually very good for spiritual advancement. where we see the beauty of the world and we think, you know, it can remind us that beauty exists. But then also there's the harshness, there's the coldness, there's the pain, and that's also good for us to make spiritual advancement. We can kind of be realistic. You know, if you're in the, they say from the heavenly realm, it's very hard, if not impossible, to make spiritual advancement. And in the hellish realms, there's no question, right? If the suffering is too great, it's hard to advance spiritually. If the enjoyment is too great, it's hard to advance spiritually. But if you get a mix of both, it's actually the earth and the middle planet, this is actually a good place to make spiritual advancement. So it's there in nature and it's also there in our minds, right? Isn't that true of us also? Happiness and distress, joy and sorrow. There are some good things, there are some bad things. So even us in this earth, our consciousness, nature is teaching us, is in harmony with the consciousness of the beings here. And then, of course, when you get into the spiritual realm, this also applies. Again, you know, Mathura, the difference. Vrindavan, what is Vrindavan? The opulence goes away. The land, too, is very simple. The cows, the lakes, the flowers. You know, there's a simplicity to it. And that's also the mind of the residents of Vrindavan. So beautiful, so clean, so pure, but also simple. Just like the land of Vrindavan. So this description of Dvarka, the Bhagavatam will give these long descriptions of places, but we can see it in this way and see the value of hearing it. So just by hearing of the place Dvarka, we learn something of the consciousness of Dvarka, which means we learn what it means to be Krishna conscious. So what is Dvarka? The beautiful gardens are mentioned, painted gates, painted arches. There are flags, colorful flags, the flag of Hanuman, the flag of Garuda. And outside each house, it's described, there's these water pots, scented water, and candles, and there's fragrant incense. And there's mango leaves used for decoration. And the residents, when Krishna announces his arrival by blowing the conch shell, they bring so many gifts to him, and they bring their words and their prayers as well. Right? They tell Krishna, Krishna, you are everything to us. You are our father. You are our mother. You are our spiritual master. You are the Supreme Lord. So it's beautiful to hear this section of the Bhagavatam, this chapter especially. And again, how can we make this practical, hearing this, you know? Festivals, right? We also come with our gifts. We make the temple very clean and very beautiful. We decorate. You know, the altar is decorated so nice with fruits and flowers. There's also fragrant incense. We also come before the Lord to take darshan. And we also offer words and prayers from our heart. So a nice chapter to meditate on when you think of temple. Festivities and festivals. We can see exactly how it's done when there's spontaneous love, and then we try to follow that. We practice that, and we bring some heart, bring your mind into it as well, bring your heart into it. In this way, we're following. This is our path, Mahajano Yena Gatasapanta. We have to follow the great souls. Whenever an incarnation of the Lord appears in this world, there are devotees that will surround that incarnation with loving surrender and service. And our path is to follow them, those devotees who do that. So the Lord appears, and then that Lord will be surrounded, because the Lord is all attractive, and if the heart is a little clean, there'll be attraction. So you can think of even other religions. There's this holds true of Christianity. Jesus appears, and a certain group surrounded him. A little rough. They were a little rough, that group. But at the same time, they were attracted. And they wanted to follow. And they became sincere. And they became purified. Lord Chaitanya. Just think of the associates that surrounded Lord Chaitanya. They were all such pure, clean-hearted souls. So every time the Lord comes, devotees will also surround the Lord. And our method, our way of going back, of knowing what is true religion, is to see their example and to follow them. That's how you truly follow a religion, any spiritual path. That's the method. So these residents of Dvarka, we can see. It says in the previous verse very nicely that the ladies, they came to the rooftop to see Krishna. Right, we heard about this in the last chapter as well. So now some ladies of Dvarka are doing the same, coming to the rooftop. And it said in the last verse, Tit Ikshana Mahotsava, that what they saw, it was like a festival for their eyes. Such a nice description. Tat Ikshana Mahotsava. Verses 24, we're on text 25 today, 24 to 27 are all describing the attractive beauty of the Lord and what is seen by looking at the Lord from these ladies. So it's an appreciation of the beautiful form of Krishna. And that's the purpose of our eyes. This is why we have eyes. The original reason. Why does the soul have eyes and ears and a nose? It's interesting, right? It's we're so used to it. I remember Radhanath Swami was giving a class and he was saying, you know, one symptom of spiritual advancement is that you're amazed at everything. You're always surprised by things and amazed at things. And he was just saying, just look at this devotee here. Look at the head and the eyes and those ears. It's so interesting. It's so amazing that Krishna has done this. So why do we have these eyes, these ears, mouth, touch, the sense of touch? All the indriyas. Indriya means like power. These are sense powers. The sense of touch, the sense of sight, the sense of hearing, the sense of smell. We have those senses. It's arranged in this way so that we can interact with God, so that we can exchange with God. But the senses, as we know, haven't fallen from that position, haven't turned away from Krishna. The senses, they become materialized. They become covered. And instead of revealing God, then the senses actually, in our present state, they block the experience of God practically. They're like veils that we're wearing. The eye is so limited, it can see nothing subtle. It can see nothing spiritual. So it's actually an obstacle to seeing Krishna, the material eyes. But once the eyes and the ears and all of the senses become purified by engaging them in the service of the Lord, then they can regain their real power, their real glory. And we can use those same senses to interact with the Lord. So, this is the original purpose of the eyes. So the residents of Dvarka here, the ladies, their eyes, it's a festival what they're seeing. But material eyes cannot appreciate. But gradually, by turning in that direction again, like it says in today's verse, the inhabitants of Dvarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty. They were accustomed. So we have to reaccustom ourselves to look upon the Lord. I remember one devotee came to New York and he was sharing his story with Prabhupada, a kind of regret that he carried in his heart, because Prabhupada asked him to go to India and serve in India. And he tried it for a long time, but he was struggling being there in the particular environment. It was just very austere. He was getting sick very often. So he approached Prabhupada in India and he said, Prabhupada, I want to serve you, and I know this is your desire that I'm here and I'm serving, but I'm getting very sick and I'm just not accustomed to India. And Prabhupada, you know, obviously he wasn't forcing him to do anything, so he accepted. He said he was, this devotee said Prabhupada was not happy, and so that was a regret he's had in his heart all these years, that he wanted him to be there. But he said, but Prabhupada said, no, if you are not accustomed, that is fine. You can go back to where you are accustomed. But then Prabhupada added, but because I am accustomed to Krishna, I can go anywhere and be okay. And he gave the example, just like I left Vrindavan and I came to New York. I was not accustomed to New York, but there was no problem because I was accustomed to Krishna and service to Krishna. So he said, if you become accustomed to Krishna, if you just make that your focus and your goal, then we're not so dependent on places and environments. You'll be able to overcome all of that. So become accustomed to Krishna, then you can deal with anything. So that was I always remember that, a nice description of what it means to be Krishna conscious, to become accustomed to Krishna. You know, like it said here, the ladies, they were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. So we'll discover by becoming reaccustomed, looking upon the Lord, at some point we'll see, we'll discover that there's no end to the beauty of the Lord. There's no end to it. Krishna, that's what's meant here in this purport by no satiation. There's no end to it. It's never enough. Just seeing Krishna, the beauty of Krishna. It goes from beauty to beauty to beauty to glory to glory. There's no end to it. Whereas in the material world, we see that things come to an end. We have some desire, some goal, some ambition. If we don't get it, then we think, oh, if I just got it, I'll be happy. That's the trick of Maya. But then if you actually get it, you'll be a little happy for some time because there was some goal, some desire. But eventually that also, the pleasure from that also goes away. But we keep trying the next thing. Maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And we're jumping around until some mercy comes our way. And we can actually hear the words of a pure soul who's telling us this, that there is actually, this is the law of satiation. Everything in this material world comes to an end. You have this very specific, even a beautiful material desire. Maybe it's very good, maybe it's very noble. But that too, we have to realize, if I were to get it, eventually, even that, I would eventually turn away. I would become weary, even of that. This is the mode of goodness. It's if you have material consciousness, it's the highest you can go, the mode of goodness. So people that are attracted to the mode of goodness, they're good people because they want something good. They're fighting for some good cause in the world. They're trying to solve some problem in the world. But the illusion is that the insight that they don't have is that even if it works out, even if I get it, but how long before again I turn away to something else? Okay, what's the next problem for me to solve? What's the next thing? That's the big realization that a devotee has that's different from just an ordinary person, is that they see this material world as like an ocean. And trying to solve a problem in this world is like trying to stop one wave in the ocean. And the ocean is constantly producing more and more waves, coming and going, coming and going. That's the nature of the ocean. So because we're in this ocean drowning, and people see there a wave, this is bad, and let's stop it. But it's just a matter of time, another wave will come, another wave. And how do you stop a wave? I mean, I guess you can try to hit the top of it or something, and you can do a little something, but another wave will come. And then sometimes a tidal wave comes, big waves. And then sometimes a little peaceful, the waves subside and we think life is good. And then again, from within the ocean, more waves. So the devotee has this very deep insight of material life, and that's why they're very directed and determined, one-pointed attention towards Krishna consciousness and not anything else, because this realization is there. We can do things in the world and help things, and we have to do our duty to make things the best we can. But there's a very profound realization a devotee has, that we're stopping, temporarily stopping waves in the ocean. The real problem is the whole ocean itself. That's the real issue. How to eliminate now, that seems impossible. How do you stop the whole ocean? How do you overcome the entire ocean? Well then, as Prabhupada explains in one place, when the devotee said, Prabhupada, why did Krishna create this material world?
Devotees, and then we walk around and we act and we interact with people. This is it. That's all you have. That's the greatest service. And then there's so many things, of course, we also want to accomplish. Prabhupada gave us so many directions and things to do. And so we want to combine these things. We want to perform so many kinds of service, and we also want to be a true devotee, an example. And that's the greatest service. So we work with people in this world, but to a certain extent. More importantly, we want to work for them. We don't want to just work with them. We want to work for them. And we want to work with them too, but we don't want to be pulled into something that's different than what our perspective is. Our perspective is very, very wonderful, and it's the essence of life, actually. It's the highest perspective. To love God and to love all living beings. Who can say something more superior than that? What's your goal in life? To love God and to love all living beings. To love everything. To serve everything. Spontaneous loving service. That's my goal. You can't think of a higher goal. The human mind cannot think of a higher goal. So sometimes people want to pull us, as devotees, pull us into some other avenue or some other kind of thing in this world. But we should, we can help and we can serve, and we should also see clearly why all the acharyas, why all the devotees give this one-pointed attention to these simple things that we're doing. Hearing, chanting, associate with devotees. The relationship to the guru, service. That's it. That's everything. But now we just give more attention, more heart to it, more focus. And the results, yeah, that's the essence. So, you know, this is something we can meditate on here because the residents of Dvarka are giving such a nice example. What causes the whole material existence is looking away from Krishna. And then that becomes like a habit. And then it's very hard to look back to Krishna. That's why we take a shelter of each other, the devotees. We remind
what is attentive chanting? It means turning the mind, now giving, let Krishna be the focus here. The name, Krishna's in the name. Let me just put my focus here. It's so difficult, isn't it? You know, the mind, it's resisting that because it wants to actually stay with my own thoughts. I want to just the ease of it, my own life, my own way. So inattentive chanting, I used to think, what can I do about inattentive chanting? I just have a distracted mind. But if you look at it more deeply, shells blowing. And the curtains, as soon as they opened, people described that Prabhupada, that tears would shoot out of his eyes. Have you ever seen anyone do that before? Tears would shoot out. What is the anticipation for tears to shoot out of the eyes? Just imagine the buildup, the anticipation, Prabhupada, the eagerness. And as soon as the curtains opened, it's amazing. Some devotees say that they were hit by those tears. Just imagine to be hit by the tears of Prabhupada's ecstasy. So this is the spontaneous love of God, so beautiful. And we can get inspiration from it, and in our own way we can desire for it, and we can practice. So we'll stop here if there are any comments, questions, thoughts, realizations.
One online question from Saranga Thakur. Could you respond to the idea that if we're good devotees, he'll give us opulence?
If we're good devotees, Krishna will give us opulence. What is a good devotee? Good devotee means pure devotee. What is the real, and what is opulence? All these words have to be defined. What is good? What is opulence? Opulence is love of God. Good is pure devotee. So, Krishna will take care of us if we're good devotees. Everything will come. Everything will be arranged. It's my understanding. And, you know, if you're actually a good devotee, small thing. But if we're actually good devotees, sincere devotees, striving devotees, then we can trust that Krishna will give everything that I need.
they are struggling? He said, because the attitude, character they did not build. Whatever, everything belongs to Krishna. For his pleasure, with that attitude, they have to appreciate. Not appreciating only everything belongs to Krishna, but it's for his pleasure, not for me. If that attitude is not there, then they will not be happy, satisfied. They will struggle. It's very difficult, in other words. Also another point on the chanting, you made a very nice point, I appreciate it. On the third canto, 26th chapter, 32 verse in the Prabhupada mentioned, anabriti shabda. One has to keep on doing sadhana, repetition of chanting, then these material waves or all these things will disappear. Otherwise it sounds good. Everything sounds good. Krishna is beautiful, prasadam is good, everything is good, and then after half an hour we go back to our old. But if we have a good sadhana, anabriti, mean repetition of chanting, then it will be possible for devotee to stay in that high position. Otherwise, not possible. I mean, we get motivated. You know, every time I hear lecture online, very nice. Of course, it's changing. I should not say that. I should not be lying. I mean, we are happy. But many devotees, you know, they struggle. But after some time, they wonder, am I doing something wrong? Why not focus, or what is going on? And then they get motivated, then again it wanes. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadambini, he said that this consciousness that I am holding has to be purified, not the process. Process has already result. Krishna has the result. We have love for Krishna. But to see it and act on it and stay on it, sadhana has to be the number one priority in life. And Prabhupada made a very nice point on Jatayu. Materially, he failed. He lost his wing. He cannot fight with Ravana. But did he think like that, or he tried to do his service? Spiritually, he got the biggest success. So only thing we can do, endeavor every day to please Prabhupada and Krishna. That's all. This should be like a top priority than anything else. But if I do only once in a while on like this, you know, when I feel good, because I always see that bhakti does not sustain on tribulation or mental emotion. It sustains on two principles. The commitment effort. So Rupa Goswami Pad, sir, this is a very nice, thank you, very nice class.
Thank you, Guru. Great, great points. Yeah. You know, it's like the example of the iron rod going into the fire. We want it to become like fire. But we keep taking it out. You know, we keep, like you're saying, the mind, you know, a little bit in, then I'm out. Then I'm in. But if it stays, and like you're saying, the sadhana is staying. But the sadhana daily, the sadhana, the commitment stays in there long enough, then it becomes just like the quality of fire. That's a great point. And I love your point also about the attitude. Because I remember one purport where Prabhupada is speaking about the universal form of the Lord. And he said, he talks about pantheism, seeing everything as God. He said, yes, you can see everything as God, but the only one way, by using everything in the service of God.